get a serious contender or challenger to an incumbent, if it isn't an open seat, where then there is no incumbent, is rare.
Voters go to the polls for the statewide primary election on Tuesday, and Haines District school students start back to school the same day. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Tara Bicknell. Those stories and more, just ahead. Classes at Haines and Mosquito Lake School resume Tuesday morning. In Haines, the first bell rings a little earlier this year at 8:25 a.m., adding an extra 10 minutes to the school day. School lets out at 3:15 every day. Enrollment is expected to be down this year to an estimated 297 students, according to Superintendent Michael Beyer. Five new teachers were brought on for the 2010-2011 school year, and at least four special education aides. Hiring continues for several positions at the school. Clockwan School students begin classes on Wednesday this week at 8:45 a.m. School lets out at 3 p.m. 14 students are enrolled so far, fewer than last year when there were no graduates. However, enrollment numbers are not considered final until school starts. Only one of Southeast's legislative races has a primary challenge this year, but there are still plenty of candidates and issues on the region's August 24th ballots. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Southeast Alaskans going to the polls on Tuesday will choose among more than 25 candidates for governor, lieutenant governor, and United States House and Senate. But when it comes to legislative races, most of the region's voters will see only one, or in some cases, no name. That's because three of the region's five House and one Senate races have only one candidate, and two of the other three elections have no primary challenger. Anchorage political consultant Mark Hellenthal says that's because all the races include the person holding the office.
Normally incumbents win roughly 90% of their elections, so to get a serious contender or challenger to an incumbent, if it isn't an open seat, where then there is no incumbent, is rare.
The one sitting lawmaker with a primary challenge is Wrangell Republican Peggy Wilson. She faces Petersburg's Stephen Samuelson in Tuesday's GOP primary for the seat that also includes Sitka and Pelican. Samuelson was also on the 2008 primary ballot. Hellenthal says running several times can be an advantage.
To a point, there is. If you get tagged as the perpetual runner and perpetual loser, there isn't a point. But if you run a couple of times, you get your name identification out there, and should Peggy decide not to run and it becomes an open seat, he'll have a name ID advantage over anybody who throws their hat in the ring.
The winner will face Sitka Democrat Reber Stein in the November 2nd general election. Two other incumbents will face challengers from the opposite party after coasting through the primary. Haines Republican House member Bill Thomas, who represents about two dozen small southeast cities and villages, is up against Cordova Democrat Robert Beadle, and Ketchikan Republican Representative Kyle Johansson, whose district includes Kaufman Cove, faces Thorne Bay Democrat Otter Mobley. But none of Juneau's three lawmakers face any challengers in the primary or the general election.
That is unusual. Not having primary challenges isn't unusual at all. In fact, that's the rule. But not having a general election challenge is highly unusual.
This is Democratic Senator Dennis Egan's first race since being appointed to fill a vacant seat, but he's well known as a former Capital City mayor and assembly member, as well as the son of Governor Bill Egan. It's Republican Representative Kathy Munoz's second race for Juneau's Mendenhall Valley-based district, and Democratic House member Beth Kurtula is seeking a seventh term representing downtown Juneau and Douglas Island. Both are daughters of former lawmakers. Hellenthal says that can't hurt.
The perception then is obviously from the people that don't have challenges, the other party views them as unbeatable. Or they would throw somebody in to run against them.
The fiercest statewide primary races in the governor and U.S. Senate elections are for Republican ballots. Hellenthal says that should boost turnout for the GOP. But overall, he says candidate numbers, as well as campaign spending, is down this season.
I'm speculating, but it could be the fear of recession. People who have been up here a long time know that we kind of lag behind the rest of the nation by a couple of years, and the rest of the nation has gone through and is going through a severe recession. And we in Alaska have been fortunate not really to have had much of the economic bite. And sooner or later is going to be making a visual effect, or people are afraid there's going to be a visual effect on our local economy. And political money is discretionary.
Voters won't see all the candidates' names. Those taking the Republican ballot will only choose among GOP candidates. Others will see Democratic, Libertarian, and Alaskan Independence nominees. Voters can also skip the party primaries and just state their choices on the election's two ballot measures. One would restrict campaign spending and contributions. The other would require parental consent for a minor's abortion. I'm Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
The candidate filing period for local borough and school board seats closes 5 p.m. Tuesday, August 24th at local borough offices. Polls for the statewide primary election open for eligible voters Tuesday, August 24th, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. at the American Bald Eagle Foundation in Haines, the Klahini Valley Fire Hall in Mosquito Lake, and Assembly Chambers in Skagway. Alaska Fisheries Management has learned some do's and don'ts from the Pacific Northwest in the past. Now, banner runs of salmon and steelhead are migrating up some Pacific Northwest rivers this summer. Not since dams were constructed on the Columbia and Snake Rivers have this many sockeye salmon returned. Meanwhile, the 2010 summer steelhead run is on pace to be the second highest on record on the Columbia. The modern record for steelhead was set in 2001. Northwest News Network correspondent Tom Bonsi explores possible explanations for the unexpectedly high salmon returns.
Bonneville Dam was finished in 1937. Ever since, fish counters have sat in front of big underwater picture windows there. Fish ladders at the dam funnel spawners past the windows.
Whoa! Look at that big, big Chinook. Steelhead.
Park ranger Jane Jackson calls out the fish as a human counter keeps track with a clicker.
Oh, wow. Wild Chinook.
Oh, look at this. Okay, there's
another wild one. And a hatchery.
We've got a big group here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 going in the window.
Rarely have salmon and steelhead filled the windows as they have this year.
Oh, that one's got a scrape.
The run of endangered Snake River sockeye has set a modern record. The returns are more than double the preseason forecast. Right on its tail comes a blockbuster steelhead run. Columbia River wild steelhead are listed as threatened. Steelhead resemble salmon, but are technically an ocean-going trout. Downstream of the dam, dozens of fishermen cast lines from the riverbank for marked hatchery origin fish.
Holy smokes, look at that.
Sport fisher Jeff Seal reels in the biggest steelhead he says he's ever caught. It's longer than his outstretched arm and weighs maybe 14 pounds.
Yep, last year was good, and just hoping this year's just as good.
Nearby, fisherman Mike Lazelle of Carson, Washington, throws out some theories with his line.
It's probably good ocean conditions have led to a good run this year. I'm sure it's probably nothing we did.
Biologists say it's hard to prove cause and effect because there are so many variables in play. A spokesman for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers would like to believe that all the money spent on dam improvements is finally paying some dividends. Tribal fisheries biologist Stuart Ellis sees benefits from a court order to spill more water over the tops of dams in the summer. That's instead of running the water and young fish through the power turbines.
One of the things that likely has occurred with these particular fish is that we've had really good outmigrating conditions for the juveniles.
A colleague of Ellis's in Portland, Jeff Fryer, mentions that fishing has been greatly reduced in places to protect threatened runs.
Back when I started in the late 80s, you get a big run and harvest 50% or so. It was a much bigger harvest allowed.
Then there's the question of whether increased hatchery production can explain higher salmon returns. State and federal fish and wildlife agencies discount this possibility. They say hatchery production overall has held pretty steady. A caveat now. Stuart Ellis points out that for every Northwest salmon run that's exceeded the preseason forecast, he can find one that's struggling. For example, this year's run of Lake Washington Chinook is falling way short.
you have to have enormous humility to work in this business because these fish are masters at faking you out. As soon as you think that you've got some real understanding of what these fish are doing and what kind of factors are influencing their survival, something will change.
Ellis is sure salmon will need intensive management into the foreseeable future. He says the region's growing population, a warming climate, and increasing demands for water are just some of the reasons why. I'm Tom Bonsi in Portland.
This is Tara Bicknell for KHNS Local News. If you miss a newscast or want to hear one again, check out khns.org and go to the listen page.